One of the worst, I think, things you can hear a doctor say ever is the C word, you know, as they say, right? Cancer. But it's not like it used to be. And proving that, Lucia Moro, film director, is a not one or two-time, three-time ovarian cancer survivor. Happy Mother's Day, Lucia.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. It's really such a pleasure to be on your show, and thank you for all your support,
well,
especially for cancer.
Oh, yes.
In the human-animal bond.
Thank you. I've been a longtime supporter of this organization, and we'll talk about one of the reasons why in a moment. But first off, welcome back to WGN. You're a former WGN correspondent, and as you probably know, we're about to celebrate our 100th birthday. Hopefully I don't look it.
Oh, I don't know. I was thinking about that. I don't know. Maybe you do, Steve.
What? Hold it.
You've been with the show for so long with WGN. I so love your work. So it just, you know, time is relative, isn't it?
My gosh, I have to look in the mirror. Maybe I shouldn't look in the mirror. I'm not sure. I'll try to be nice to you regardless.
What a way to start.
No. Seriously, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And a three-time ovarian cancer survivor. I mean,
yes.
You know, so when you were hit by this the first time, you must have thought, oh, my gosh, you know, and then you survive. What does it feel like when it's announced by a doctor again and yet again?
Oh, well, it's extremely numbing. You just feel that you've done all this work, you've had surgery, you've gone through chemo, and you think, wow, I feel so great again. And then it hits you, and you're challenged again along your path. There's another roadblock in your way. And you just, and then it's deflating. You think, why did I do all this? Is it just going to keep coming back? And that's a huge part of being an ovarian cancer patient and survivor, that there is a fear of recurrence. It does have a high rate, but with each recurrence, Steve, I said to myself, you're gonna keep moving forward. You're going to do this. You're not going to give up. You know, cancer isn't going to win. And so while it was a lot of treatment, many different kinds, it was also mental and emotional, and the support system of my husband and my family. And you just have to keep believing that you're going to get through it. And there's a reason why you were faced with this, and perhaps it's to help other people get through it. I've been doing that with my film, or a couple of my projects, where I do go in and talk to a lot of cancer patients and survivors. Just listen to their stories and what their concerns are.
It must be, though, so I can stand here and talk about surviving cancer and talk about how amazing that is and how difficult it must be, but I have no idea, you know. Mm. So can you describe a little bit and also talk about the fortitude? I mean, you're describing this upbeat, but at that time, I can't even imagine, or did you refuse to think anything but, I am going to beat this?
Yeah, it's so strange. You know, it affects everyone differently, Steve. But for me, it was certainly, I felt like I wanted to curl up in a ball. I think everybody does, or just about everyone who's received that news.
Mm-hmm.
But then something else kicked in, and it was, I really have no choice. I have to move forward, and I better do the best I can. So if it requires surgery, if it then requires chemo and radiation and whatever it takes, I'll just keep setting goals for myself. You know, I think, through creativity as a filmmaker, I was writing a semi-autobiographical film, which I made, called 1 Year Later, about the emotional side of being faced with cancer, and things like not losing your identity to the cancer. You know how a lot of people will start becoming overprotective of us, and they're very worried, and mm-hmm. It's all that well-meaning overprotection, but then you start becoming defined by the cancer, and I resisted that a lot. I didn't want to be treated that way. I wanted people to care, and show concern, but I also want it to be independent, that, you know, I want to make my own decisions, and I don't need people hovering me all the time, over me all the time. And there's also that very regimented schedule we're on, you know, when we have our chemo sessions and all our doctor's appointments and our blood work, you almost want to just escape from that environment and have absolutely no schedule. You know, and there's also the whole idea of your physical image. You know, I lost my hair twice. And when I often say to people, and I don't mean to joke or to be, you know, make light of this, but I've often said, you know, if I go to my hairstylist, my hair has grown back, and my hair was really long during the pandemic. And I remember saying to my hairdresser, well, you know, when you've been bald twice and you keep losing your hair, it doesn't really matter. You could go as short as you want this time. You know, my hair has been so long. Yeah. Just go as short as you can. It doesn't matter to me anymore. It was devastating when it happened. You know, I was first diagnosed in 2012. My first recurrence was in 2014, the second December of 2016, and I was going through treatment into 2018. So this is all quite recent for me. I mean, I still have to do all my follow-up, my CT scans, my blood work. You learn to manage the cancer. Now, you don't really want it to win, but you have to manage it.
Now,
it's always somehow there.
Compared to 2012, and I know you're not a physician, but from a patient's perspective, are doctors able to do more today for ovarian cancer compared to, what was that, about 20 years ago? Is my math right? 10 years ago?
Well, 10 years ago.
Yes.
There are so many clinical trials, and I think they are able to do more. I mean, I participated in a clinical trial, which I think was very helpful. I do want to say that the area that I'm so really fascinated with is the canine scent detection.
Right, so I definitely want to talk to you about that, and here's what you're talking about, because I was a part of this story. A colleague of mine, Darlene Arden, who passed herself of ovarian cancer, a colleague of mine because she wrote about pets. She also hosted, she was a sister in sound. She hosted a radio show about pets. I was on her show many times. She was on my show many times. We were friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she had this dream of, which at that time was considered, you're crazy, that dogs, because she knew that dogs could, for example, at that time, we even knew that dogs could find diabetes in people and tell if someone has too much insulin, not enough insulin, that kind of thing. Diabetic detection dogs were at that point in time a thing, that the real thing. So she thought the possibility, and she had heard the stories in the popular media. She'd reported on many over the years that person was found to have cancer, and oh my gosh, it was really my dog who found it. And we know that dogs ask any a physician that delivers babies, that the dog will be the first to know before the pregnancy test. That's all. Knowing all that, she thought, okay, there's no reason why dogs couldn't detect ovarian cancer. She left some money for this purpose, and Ovarian Cancer Symptom Awareness, and we'll give you the website when we're done, created a fund that you can still contribute to. And at University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine, a very famous veterinarian, Dr. Cynthia Otto, has begun the work and actually has now completed a lot of the work. I'll stop there and I'll let you tell us what the results are.
Well, yes. Well, so I'm actually directing a documentary about ovarian cancer symptom awareness. And, you know, certainly their work, the work of the community, and the work of Dr. Cindy Otto. So in the fall, we are going to be going out to Penn Vet and talking with Dr. Cindy Otto and the interns that Ovarian Cancer Symptom Awareness has sponsored. So I'm giving credit here to co-founder and executive vice president Valley Szymanski, who I met last fall, and we became very close.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, the work is testing and trying to determine the odorants specific to ovarian cancer, and working with the dogs, especially dogs that you know, the dogs that were actually many of them who are descendants of the dogs from 9/11 and who are going into the World Trade Center and trying to find the remains of individuals. These are, you know, they're very specially attuned, and so they're trying to find through the canine sense of smell, combining these odorants, if there could be a test, a way of finding an early detection test for ovarian cancer through this sense of smell. And I stress early detection because, Steve, as you know, ovarian cancer has little to no symptoms. They're vague, kind of whispers, symptoms like bloating and nausea or abdominal pain can be associated with, say, perimenopause, which I thought mine were. So having this type of test is critical, and ovarian cancer symptom awareness has been working tirelessly and diligently on moving this forward. So they're essentially moving into the next phase of their own clinical trials with Dr. Cindy Otto, and that's what we'll be documenting in the next couple of months.
And it turns out that it has been successful. She has proven that the dogs can do this. Now, there's not going to be a dog, I don't believe, although that would be nice, in every doctor's office around the country. The idea is that from this, she's working with chemists, I believe, who can then develop a test. And she also has told me that the hope is this can now be replicated for other kinds of difficult-to-detect early types of cancer, like stomach cancer or esophageal cancer, etc.
That's correct. They're related. So this the possibilities for this are endless. And I believe that working with the cancer-sniffing dogs, it's not a fad. I mean, this is real. I mean, they're proving it. And I believe this is a huge step in cancer research, that we live at a time where it's being taken very seriously. And we're seeing the true connection between humans and animals. And just so you know, I'm a great, great animal lover. And my husband and I have been involved in bird rescue for many years.
Nice.
And so we're very close to animals. I believe that they have that sixth sense. And we could work together in both of those worlds, that humans and animals are truly linked.
Well, I agree with that. Now, is there a website people can go to for more information?
Yes, they can go to ovariancancersymptomawareness.org, and they could find more information about our documentary film, which is also chronicling the Hayward, Wisconsin community, and kind of, you know, making a difference through a grassroots level and the true work of a community toward moving ovarian cancer research forward.
Wow. So I just received a text here I need to read to you. I'm so glad to hear this woman talking about ovarian cancer. I am getting into my fifth year of remission this month.
Incredible.
Well, let me finish. This gets even more amazing, but I've heard stories like this before. My friend's dog kept sniffing me on one spot, and that is the spot where I was diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I've heard those stories too. A pleasure to meet you, Lucia. I am sure we will talk again.
We will. Well, thanks so much, Steve.